sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening, a beautiful sight, we're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird, here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman.
Hi everybody, hey, this is Bobby Elias. Great show today. Ellie Lax, our guest, will be here. She runs the Gentle Barn, a place for animals, a place of love. We're going to talk about that love and what's happening in the world today. We've got some great stuff for you, so hang in there. Ellie's one of our most popular guests, and I'm really excited to have her. She's going to tell you an enormous great story at the beginning, and we're going to go from there. Also, like to let you know, the next few weeks we've got our set lineup. Next week, December the 12th, Dr. Christine Horner will be speaking. She's one of the premier doctors anywhere to talk about longevity, health, quality of life. Then on the same show, we'll have the man that runs a great program called Food Not Bombs, Keith McGregor. He's going to talk about, Keith McHenry, I should say. He's going to talk about what's happening around the country with poverty, homelessness, and feeding people. The government needs to do a better job of all those issues. We'll talk about that at length. So, here's the phone number to call. If you have a friend or yourself, you want to hear the show on your phone, call this number. Take it down now. It's area 701-801-3662. You can hear the show anytime from any phone. You can also get it on PRN.FM. And also, don't forget, all of our shows are on the archives. And there you go to PRN.FM and go to shows. The name of the show, Let's Create a Better World. And you can look up the different shows. All right. Our guest today is Ellie Lax. She is the founder of the Gentle Barn, a great, great refuge for animals that no one else wants. And they have a great, great rehab system to heal them, a system that's even better. Some of the machinery they have, better than I've seen for human beings. And when I've gone there, the animals are just all loving, the whole place is just an aura of love. And I credit our guest today, Ellie Lax, on that. She's the founder. She's got, once her plans are to have a Gentle Barn in every state in the country. So listen to her. Stay in touch with her. Her work is just great. Ellie, thanks for being on the show and welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, Bobby. I love being on your show and talking to you.
Yeah, you're always great. You always have a lot of great insights. Let's start. We have a lot of things to talk about. For our guests, we're going to talk first about her story. We're going to talk about the Gentle Barn, how through therapy they heal animals, how when the children come, school children come to visit, how they are treated and how they learn about love and about exchanging love and a better outlook on animals, period, and the world. Then we're going to talk about what's going on in the world today with Trump, with Standing Rock. We're going to talk about what's happening with the whole world, how we can make it change, how we can make this a better world. She has some of the best insights. I only talk about this with certain guests that I think can give us a real good perspective on how can we make this a better world. We'll talk about that at the end. So let's start out with your story, Ellie, about how you started. I think you were 7 years old. Tell that great story and go from there. Thank you.
Sure. So I have always loved animals. I think I came out of the womb that way. I just was obsessed with animals and nature always. And when I would find them in my neighboring woods and lakes, lost or orphaned or injured, I knew they needed me. So I would bring them home. And my parents didn't want the animals. My mom was struggling to raise me and my brothers, and she didn't want, you know, a house full of animals to care for as well. And so she would send them off when I was at school, and I'd come home to find them gone. And I would get very, very upset and say, how can you do this to me? And she would say, well, Ellie, when you grow up, you can have as many animals as you want. And so I would yell back at her, this temper tantrum. I would say, well, when I grow up, I'm going to have a huge place full of animals, and I'm going to show the world how beautiful they are. And that was my temper tantrum at 7 years old, and it grew into an obsession. I would sit in school, and I would draw what the gentle barn would look like, and I would go to sleep at night, and I would fantasize about all the animals that I would get to love. And it just became something that I thought about constantly. But I didn't know how to start a sanctuary, and I didn't have land or money or even the support of the people that I knew. Everyone that I knew thought I was crazy, that I wanted to have a big place full of animals. And so I procrastinated for a really long time, thinking about it, wanting it, yearning for it, but not really knowing how to start it. And then I lived in a little house with a half-acre backyard in the valley 18 years ago. And I, doing an errand in the San Fernando Valley, I found a petting zoo I'd never seen before. And it was full of animals and full of people, and it smelled kind of funny. So I parked and went in just to kind of check it out. And to make a long story short, it was full of suffering animals. The goats and sheep had very overgrown toenails. The ponies were being beaten to keep going round and round in circles for hours, carrying the kids. There were dead animals in cages. I mean, it was just an absolute horrendous experience. And I think the worst part about that experience was, of course, seeing the animals suffering, but more so it was seeing the people being oblivious. The place was full of people, tourists and families, and they were putting their children up on these dilapidated, exhausted ponies. They were wandering around looking at the animals, and it didn't seem like anyone there could see the suffering of the animals. They were just absolutely blind, and they were taking pictures, and they were smiling, and they were having this wonderful time where right in front of their faces were animals that were suffering in the most horrendous ways. And I was just so taken aback. Like, why can't they see the suffering of these animals? Why can't they hear them? Why can't they hear their suffering? And I just didn't understand it, and it filled my heart with so much sorrow. And I ran for the door as fast as I could, and blocking my way was a very old goat that looked like she was about to drop dead any second. But she looked me right in the eye. She looked me deep into my eyes, and she asked me for help. She said, please help me. And so I was stuck there. I mean, here was this creature begging me for help. She had overgrown toenails. She had deformed legs. Her coat was matted and dirty. She had such a hollow face, and I couldn't leave her there. And so I thought, well, I mean, I have a half-acre backyard. I guess I can take home a goat. So I went to find the owner and said, hey, can I have that goat? And she said, no. And I said, well, can I buy her? Name your price. And she said, no, lady, leave me alone. And I said, okay, well, I'm not going to leave her because I know she's going to die. I'll stay here till you say yes. And I stayed there for 12 days. On the 13th day, she came and said, listen, take the goat and get the heck out of here. And so I took Mary home. And I found a vet that would help me remove her tumors and trim her nails and put her on a strong nutritional plan to revive her. And months later, she was bouncing around my backyard as happy as can be. And it was the most fulfilling experience I've ever had in my life to take an animal that was so hopeless, so sad, so ill, and to breathe the life and the joy and the hope back into her was the greatest thing I'd ever done. And I said, oh my God, I have to do that again. And so I went back to the petting zoo because I had called SPCA Animal Control and the Humane Society to see if they could help the animals there, and they all said that they couldn't help. And so I went back to the petting zoo with a picture of Mary, and I said, listen, doesn't she look amazing? These are all the things that I did for her. I know that you have other animals that are in need. No questions asked. I'll take them off your hands. And I guess she didn't want me to wait there for another 12 days, so she handed me all these animals. She dragged them out of the back, and they all had broken bones, pneumonia, were scared to death and dying. And I took them all home, and the same mobile vet helped me heal all of them one by one. And a few months later, I was looking out my little picture window out to my backyard that was now full of animals, and it hit me. I was like, holy cow, I just started my dream. So that's how the gentle barn got started 18 years ago.
That's a great story. That's a beautiful story, and it's real. Our listeners, I want you to know this woman is pure, and her intentions are just really good. Tell us now briefly, because I want to get to the other things that we talked about, how we can make this a better world, et cetera. But briefly about there, you have a great, great rehab system over there. And also, talk about that and the what how these animals get healed.
Yeah, so from the get-go, I was always attracted to animals that no one really wanted. You know, they were either too old or too sick or too lame or too scared to be adoptable. So everyone else seemed to pass them over. The animal control put them down, vets wanted to euthanize them, and the people didn't want to adopt them. And so those were the ones that my heart tugged for. Like, I really just wanted, they had no one, and I wanted to be there for them. So because they had such extensive ailments, I had to start thinking outside the box. So, of course, we use vet care, but I had to start implementing other ways of healing these animals because sometimes there's a limit to what Western medicine can do. And so I've incorporated acupuncture, acupressure, chiropractic, deep tissue massage therapy, ultrasound, ice therapy, water therapy, energetic healing, nutritional supplements, animal communication, and lots of love. And with all those elements in my toolbox, I have been able to have some huge successes in healing animals that others couldn't. We are very, very good at healing parvo in puppies and taking baby calves out of veal crates and healing them. And we specialize in orphaned animals as well. So especially in orphaned animals, when you're talking about a little animal that has literally nothing to live for because their bodies are sick, they've been through abuse, and they're not connected to anyone. They have no family. They have no mom. They have nothing to live for. There's a really extremely high mortality rate. But at the Gentle Barn, not only do we use all of these holistic methods to heal them, but we also put people with them 24 hours a day so that they're never, ever left alone. And so they're held in our arms. We sing to them. We read to them. We lay with them. And through our vet care and nutritional methods and holistic methods healing their bodies and us holding them and loving them and letting them know that they're not alone, we have a really high success rate in recovering animals that are on the verge of death.
Ellie, no one, I've been to a few other sanctuaries and I've seen what they do and they do some good work, but nowhere near what all that you just said right there. That's just totally, totally loving, caring, healing, like no one I've ever seen. I mean, we should implement that system for a lot of human beings that need this kind of love and attention and help. But anyway, this is great. Like, let me tell our listeners, know we're speaking with Ellie Lax. She runs the Gentle Barn. But we're not only talking about the animal sanctuary, but we're going to get into the children coming over her place, and we're going to talk about love, and it's Christmas, and talk about what's going on in the world. So, but our listeners also, I want you to know that that song you heard at the beginning, Johnny Mathis, a long time ago song, and Johnny was in San Francisco. He was a mulatto, mixed blood. He was gay, but he sang a lot of great songs. We're going to have that whole song, or as much of it as possible, at the end of the show. So stay with us. And the rest of this month, we'll have nothing but Christmas songs at the beginning and end of the shows. And we'll get classics. We'll get the best of the best. All right, so let's get into the thing about children and love. What I noticed when I was there is that those animals are just have so much love because your whole staff gives them love. Now, when the children come from schools, many from inner city schools, and then I want you to talk about Pomona, you're getting about the Compton. You're getting ready to go to an inner city, a real tough neighborhood, and you can tell the story as to why you're going there. But first, let's talk about the children, how it's so important that they learn that these animals can love them, how they can learn to give the animals love, and they have a whole new perspective of life, love, and the world when they leave your place. I really believe that. So you could talk about that, but also you could talk about the idea of some children that came. And you're going to be going to Compton this month to do some work over there. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I think the only way that the world is going to change and that we are going to evolve and we're going to find peace is by education and legislation. So, I mean, I'm not good at legislation or politics, so I chose in my life to do education. So, you know, I mean, there's not enough land to save as many animals as needed to be saved in this life. You can't just keep saving animals. Something has to change. We have to wake people up. We have to help people be kinder. We have to help the animals not suffer so much. And so
in my opinion, for me, it's not enough just to rescue animals. I want to stop animal suffering. I want to help people be kinder. And so the way that I want to do that is to approach the future generations, children, and make a connection between these children and animals so that they have an affinity for them and they have a compassion and empathy for them and they know what they need and how to care for them and they can be their voice. And when they grow up, they can implement laws that protect animals and we can have future generations that are kinder to animals and to nature and our environment because, my God, this planet needs protection. And so Monday through Friday at the General Barn, in the mornings we do school field trips. And we work with children from kindergarten all the way through high school and then college. And we have the kids come and learn about the animals here and their stories and how they've overcome and how they communicate through body language and how even though at first glance we seem so different, really under the surface we are all the same. So it's a wonderful way not only to teach kindness and compassion to animals and to nature, but it's also a way to teach tolerance for all beings. And so we do that in the mornings, and then in the afternoons, we do groups of at-risk inner-city and special needs children. They come to the barn, and they're dealing with poverty, they're dealing with family issues, they're dealing with drugs and violence and crime and neglect. They're dealing with, some of these kids don't even have shoes to wear. They're dealing with some real harsh life issues. And most of them are not doing very well in school. And so they can come out to the General Barn and connect to the animals and, more importantly, connect to the animals' stories of resilience. And through the animals and through their stories of resilience, these kids gain their own strength. They find themselves in the barnyard, and they leave with their heads held high, their hearts open, and just a little bit more hope that their lives can be what they want it to be when they get older. But they're not stuck in their circumstances, but they can persevere and survive through it and then one day land up with beautiful, wonderful lives, just like the animals. And I remember one specific group. We end all our groups at the wishing well. So we can talk about how the General Barn was a wish since I was 7, so I believe that dreams come true. And so all the kids get a chance to make a magic wish at our wishing well before leaving the General Barn. And on this one occasion, we had a group of kids from South Central Los Angeles, and when we were about to make our wishes, one 9-year-old boy said, "Yeah, but wishes don't come true." And he had so much anger and venom the way that he said that. And so we spent a great deal of time talking about how wishes do come true when we don't give up. And I gave my own story as an example about how, you know, I wanted a General Barn since I was 7. And yeah, it took me 30 years, but I finally did it. And then we talked about different people throughout history that have come from nothing and nowhere and have made these incredible lives. And the only thing that they all have in common, no matter where they're from, whether they're successful filmmakers or book writers or sports or athletes or celebrities, the only thing they all have in common, because they all started from nothing, was that they all never gave up. They never, ever gave up on their dreams. And so we talked about that. And then eventually this boy kind of cultivated hope again and started making wishes. And I remember on that day watching his eyes squeeze shut, his hands resting on the rocks of the wishing well, and watching him make this wish. And I just had this thought, like, God, I wish I could do more for these kids. They literally come from nothing in South Central Los Angeles. And I wish that I could give them more or do more for them. Well, shortly after that day, we got a call from a warehouse owner saying that there had been 250 toys left in his warehouse. And he knew that we worked with children. Did we want them? And me and my husband looked at each other, and we immediately was like, yes, we got to bring them down to South Central Los Angeles, these kids that come to us. And so we loaded all these toys in the back of our pickup truck. We drove down to South Central Los Angeles, and with a police escort, we went door to door and just knocked on the door and gave out presents to whoever was in the house. And the smiles and the shouts of joy from the children was amazing, but even more so the relief and the tears and the gratitude on the faces of these parents. It was the most amazing day. We gave out every single present, and while we were driving home with tears in our eyes because it had been so fulfilling, Jay and I said, we've got to do this every single year, and every single year we've got to try to serve more families. And so the next year, we set up a little event in front of the police station, and we served food, and we gave out toys and books and backpacks and presents, and we served about 500 families. And again, it was like the greatest feeling. All these parents were just so grateful, and the kids were so happy. And then the next year, we closed down the street in front of the police department. We shut down the entire street, and we serviced about 1,000 families. And then I think this is our, like, fifth or sixth year. Last year, we ended up doing it at the fire station. The fire station is across the street from the police station, and they have this enormous parking lot. And we took up the entire parking lot and the street in between the fire station and the police station. And we served everybody a hot meal. We gave out shoes and new socks to every single person. We gave out Christmas presents and backpacks and school supplies and clothes and toys. We had a bouncy house for the kids to play in. We had Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus. We had music. It was amazing. And we gave out 1,500 presents, and it was the greatest feeling ever. And so we are gearing up for our sixth year in a few weeks. We're going to go down there again, and we're going to give out gifts. And I think the joy and the gratitude was incredible, but the one single thing that stands out the most that I think of every time I think of going down there each year is there was a girl, and she was in the line to get new shoes. And so we wanted to take off her old shoes to fit her in her new pair. And when we took off her old shoes, first of all, she didn't have any socks. And second of all, her feet were covered in blisters because the shoes were two sizes too small. And so we cleaned off her feet, and we gave her a pair of brand new socks and a pair of brand new shoes. And she just sat there, and tears were streaming down her face because she was so grateful to be wearing shoes that didn't hurt her.
Wow, what a story. That, you know, that brings up the idea that more people need to hear this story, not only what you're doing, but as an example of what the government and what so many organizations and so many people, period, should be doing out there to help not only give more love, but more in getting to these children. But that brings up the next subject we want to talk about. And before I do that, I want to let our listeners know we are speaking with Ellie Lax, founder and inspiration for the Gentle Barn, a place where they take in animals that no one else wants, a place that's full of enormous amount of love for the animals, school children, and is an example of what they can do. And later she's going to talk, I want her to tell us about how she wants to put a Gentle Barn in every state in this country. You've got such beautiful dreams. But first, let me finish saying what I'm saying, and that is this show and this, we want to back this woman up. And I would love to see a DVD made of some of your work, Ellie, and also that more people know about what you're doing, because this is it's great that you go once a year, and you're doing fantastic to take care of these children with toys and food. But we need the government. We need the, and this brings up the next subject, like I said, and I want your thoughts on why, because the city, the governments, the agencies, the politicians are not doing anything. This country is run by greedy corporations, greedy bankers, and it's that greediness just filtered down people that run things, even families. It's just the whole country is in chaos. And I know it's going to change. It's going to take some time. I want your take on that and how this is an inspiration for how things that we can do to make this a better city, country, and world. Your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to go back to how we first started this interview and me saying how when I went to the original petting zoo that started the Gentle Barn, there were all these suffering animals, and the most horrifying thing that stays in my mind till this day is how the place was full of people, and the people could not notice the suffering of the animals. They couldn't see it. They couldn't hear it. They couldn't feel it. They were just stuck on their own blind, ignorant agenda of, you know, having a good time with their kids and not looking beyond their own experience. And I think that that is an example for what we are facing globally. I think that we have become a very complacent society. And I think that it's almost done intentionally. And this is a little bit conspiracy theory, but bear with me for a minute. If you look at our society, you look at 1% holds the majority of the wealth of the world, right? And that 1% right. has kind of designed things to create that 1% that holds all the wealth, and then the rest of us being shaped and molded to really not think for ourselves, to stay ignorant and in fear, and to spend lots of money so that 1% can stay wealthy. So if you look at even our scholastic system, we've got these amazing children that come in knowing who they are, knowing what they're attracted to and want to do, knowing what they've come here to do, but instead of molding them and shaping them according to their interests and their passions and their talents, we shove them in school for 8 hours a day and then give them 4 hours of homework when they come home. So let's keep them sitting still and quiet. Let's keep them busy. And let's not mold and shape them to be leaders and self-thinkers and self-starters and support their passions and their desires and their talents. Let's just tell them to sit down, shut up, and let's just keep them busy in school. So we're not creating leaders. We are creating followers. We're creating a society of people that just do what they're told, spend money, and the 1% of the population makes all the money. So that's an inherent problem, and that problem is never going to get better with led by government, because government wants to stay the 1% that holds all the wealth and have everybody else just be quiet and do as they're told. I think this problem is only going to get better when the rest of us stand up and don't take it anymore. I think we need to find a way to think for ourselves. We need to find a way to take care of ourselves and not do what we're told. We're told things like meat, it's what's for dinner, or milk, it does the body good. Those things are not true. Meat is not good for us. Milk is making our bodies sick. So we can't just sit here and be quiet and do what we're told. We have to stand up and start thinking for ourselves. We have to start caring. We have to start looking beyond our own experience. We have to start noticing what others are going through and what issues there are on the table, and then we need to find ways to do things about it. And only when each and every one of us as individuals stands up, takes control, and starts thinking for ourselves, then we're going to have a nation of people that will mold how the money is spent. And instead of spending money on cruelty and suffering and violence and greed, we will start spending our money on peace and sustainability and gentleness and reverence for all life. And when that happens, then we will start having animals that don't suffer. We'll have an environment that stays healthy and strong. We'll have children that are happy and fulfilled, and we'll have a peaceful society. But it has to start with each of us looking beyond our own experience. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, it's going to be sparked by this new president, and he's going to do so many things that, guess what? In a small way, that's going to wake people up. That's going to make people start organizing, joining groups, banding together, following leaders, and standing up to themselves and speaking out against what's wrong, and going, look at what happened. I didn't mention it earlier, and I think I'd like your thoughts on this too. The Standing Rock, the reservation, the area in North Dakota where the pipeline has been, the new news came out today that they're going to stop it. There's no more. They can no longer continue it, and it's a big victory for the Native Americans. And I heard Chief Archibald today on radio talking about how this is the first time ever in his lifetime, and as far as he knows, history of Native Americans, that they won something, because they're always being turned down and rejected. And I know when I met you, you were having a group of Native Americans at your general barn, and I know how you feel about them. So I'd like your thoughts on how the treatment of Native Americans is, and how. And we can go on and on. I talk about slavery, and we could talk about all the Japanese internments. We could talk about a lot of racism and hate. And let me tell you one more thing before I let you go. Way, way back, and this is a story about Native Americans, how when they came to New England back 520-some years ago, and they settled in there on a boat from Europe. They were Englishmen, English settlers. And they met all these wonderful natives, 700 of them. And these natives took them in, as they always do. They're always welcome you, come on, offer them food. We're real nice to them. And these are new people, new guests. And these people, the leaders of the people, and some of them were Christian too, by the way, they got together and they said, well, wait a minute, hold on. These people, we are the chosen people. According to the Bible, we They chose themselves as the chosen people. We are the chosen people, and these people are savages, animals. We have to kill them all. And they did. They killed over 700 natives, and I told this story around Thanksgiving time that they wound up killing them all, and then they had a big dinner. Some people say that was the beginning of Thanksgiving. That was what it was about. There are other stories. I don't know. I wasn't there, so I can't say for sure if this was the main reason. But the treatment of natives, of blacks, of people of color, poor people, disabled people, women, that's what this show is all about, Ellie, and I think you know that. That's why I'm glad to have you talk about it. But I want your take on the treatment of Native Americans and where we're at today on this. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's another example of how government came in. They obliterated Native Americans to steal the country and have the power. And even today, it goes on in reservations and Native Americans fighting for their land and the government trying to take it. And I think that it's another example of something that most people are like, well, that doesn't concern me. That doesn't affect me. I don't need to worry about that. I don't need to care about that. But it's another thing that we do need to care about, because even though it's not affecting maybe us and our families, it's affecting another living being, and we have to stand up for suffering and bullying, no matter who it's happening to. And so this complacency has to end, and we need to start standing up for justice, no matter who we're standing up for, whether it affects us or not. And Standing Rock is such a wonderful example of exactly what we're talking about, because Standing Rock, it wasn't just the specific tribe that was being affected. Native American tribes from all over the world came to stand with them, and citizens from all over America came to stand with them, and they just kept insisting this is not going to happen. And they stood up for justice. They stood together. They held hands. They supported each other. And look, now you're saying that they announced that they're going to stop the pipeline. I mean, that is a huge, huge victory, and it shows us what we can do when we stand together and we stand up in the face of bullying and we stand up for justice. When we do that, really, really good things happen. And we can do that for women, and we can do that for natives, and we can do that for minorities, and we can do that for people with different sexual orientations, and we can do that for animals. And when we stand up and plant our feet in gentleness and in reverence and in kindness and in generosity, it's always a win-win, and good things always happen. And so, yeah, does meat taste good? Sure. But let's not eat it. Let's stand up for what's right for animals.
You know, big victory for Nate.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's a big victory for Native Americans. And this shows, as you just pointed out to some degree, that people can make change. If people stand up enough, like people came from around the world, leaders, celebrities, and even politicians. There's a great senator from Hawaii that spoke up strongly about this. And so what I'm saying is, and, you know, going back to FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and many presidents in between, including Obama, has said this: you have to show me, do something, and make me make the change. In other words, when people go to him and say, you got to change this, he's not going to change it unless we raise hell or we do something to get his attention and get the attention of the country. And that's what's going to happen, Ellie. I really believe. I'm an intuitive to some degree, and I really believe and I see that there's going to be a lot of organizing, a lot of groups, and a lot of crazy stuff that this new president is going to do, that for immigration and for all the things against people of color and the prison situation. There's so many things that are wrong in this country, and people are going to stand up. They're going to fight. And we're going to find a way to turn things around and make this a better world. I really see that. More and more of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, and I think it's time. I think it really is time to do that. And I think when we have a fairly good leader in the White House, it's really easy for us to say, oh, well, you know, they're going to fix it. They're going to change it. They're going to make it better. You know, they're going to handle it. But when you have someone really awful in the White House and you have some really, really awful leaders, then we have no choice but to stand up and lend our voice. We have no choice. We have no choice but to every single one of us as individuals has to go, well, what can I do? Can I join a demonstration? Can I write my congressman? What can I do? How can I
raise my voice? How can I take a stand? How can I join my brothers and sisters? We have no choice. We are here. We are here in this moment where Trump has now is about to take office, and things are going to go downhill really fast, or we can all take a stand. We can all find out what we can do. We can all support each other, and we can turn this thing around. So, you know, it's kind of like everyone, you know, when the election first happened, I was so devastated. I couldn't stop crying. But if you look at it kind of big picture, it's, you know, this move might really force us to make things happen and to stand together and make change. And in the global picture, God, isn't it about time?
Yeah, you've got some good ideas on what we can do. To add to that, here's some things that I think we can do, and we've talked about this with other great guests like yourself, about how we can make this a better world. Number one, politicians, call them. Use your power. Get organizations to let them know what you're talking about. Go to their office. Protest. Demonstrate. Let politicians know what you want. Remember, they're counting on your vote, so tell them. If you don't do this, we're going to organize and vote against you. We're going to get you out of office. They're not going to want that, because these crooked politicians, most of them are making lots of money from lobbyists and other people to get things done. And most of them are crooked. Most of them are doing some horrible, horrible things. Another thing you can do, join an organization, a do-good organization for animals, for children, for people of color, for the war, against the war, against genetically engineered foods, against climate change. There's so many issues. And use that and get that group, work with that group to organize with other groups and raise some hell and do something. Demonstrations. These things need to be done and done right away, and they will be. I really foresee that, Ellie, and I really see this. And another thing, we need more compassion. We need more love, humility. We need more caring for each other. Like you said, these people were watching and they did nothing. They didn't understand and see how these animals were suffering. People don't see these things unless it affects them. So with these changes, a lot of people are going to be affected. Seniors are going to be affected. A welfare system is going to be affected. The prison system is run by corporations that are paying these guys pennies to the dollar an hour to work so hard for them. And many, many people, many prisoners are in solitary for years and years. This is all so wrong, so ugly, so corrupt by some of the worst people in the world. More of your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I have two things to say about that. The first of which is, I think that as people, we tend to think, well, if it doesn't affect me directly, then I don't need to care. And I just want to say, for the record, we do need to care. If something's happening to someone else, even if it doesn't affect us, we do need to care, because we are one people. We are all connected, even if it's just energetically. We are all connected, and everything affects something else that affects something else that affects something else that ultimately and eventually affects us. So when you think you don't have to care about something because it doesn't affect you, it does affect you. We have to stand together and care about each other. We have to. And then the other thing that I wanted to say was, I think that a lot of people, we tend to think that if one person does something, it's not going to make a difference. Oh, I'm going to write one email to a congressman. Like, why is it going to make a difference? Oh, I'm going to go on one march. Like, who cares? Oh, if I don't eat meat, millions of animals are slaughtered, so who cares? Like, I think that, you know, people tend to think, oh, what difference does it make if I'm going to do something? And I want to reinforce what a difference an individual makes. There's a quote, I can't remember by who, but it says something like, what change can come from one individual? Oh, but it's the only change that ever has happened. Like, in other words, one person has so much power, and I think way more power than we think we have. You know, our energy, our passion, our being in a demonstration, it makes a difference. Us writing letters, it makes a difference. Where we spend our money makes a difference. We vote with our dollars. So when we don't buy something, we're telling that company that's not the way to go. When we do buy something that's sustainable or ethical or cruelty-free, then we're voting with our dollars that company should keep moving in that direction. When we don't eat animals, we save 198 animals a year. We save an acre of trees every year. We save 600 gallons of water a day. there is huge, huge power with one single person making a change for peace. So if every single one of us says, how can I be more peaceful? How can I eat more peacefully? How can I buy more peacefully? How can I get the message out to my congressmen and council people to be more peaceful? How can I support more peaceful companies? How can I spread more peaceful awareness to my friends? If each of us wakes up every day and we ask ourselves that question, then that day will be spent having an impact for more peace. And all of us put together will make a huge difference and will create the change that is needed. And we can all change history, but it starts with the individual. And so instead of thinking, oh, well, they're going to do it, they're going to fix it, they're going to handle it. No, we have to. How can we fix it? How can we participate? What can we do every day to make a difference? And if everyone asks that question when we wake up in the morning, that day will be really productive and we will change history together.
Beautiful. Well said. This is exactly what we need. Another thing I'd like to move on a different subject is you have a dream of the General Barn being in every state in this country. I'd like you to talk about that for a minute. And before I do that, our listeners, this is Ellie Lax I'm speaking to. I'm Bobby Elias. Our show is Let's Create a Better World. Hang in there. We've got a beautiful song for you at the end of the show for more announcements. But we're going to talk about the General Barn and Ellie's great idea to spread this word out all over the country.
Yeah, I mean, the General Barn was my dream since I was 7, and we finally started it in Los Angeles, California. We are home to 175 animals. And just with every animal that we bring in, to see the joy come back on their faces and to see them run and build friendships and have hope in their eyes again, it is the most wonderful thing to see. I get to see miracles every day. And then to add the children and our visitors, you know, we're open to the public every Sunday from 10 to 2, and we do the school field trips during the week, and we do the special needs and at-risk and inner-city kids in the afternoons. And with every person that comes in and has a connection with these animals and learns about animals and their hearts are opened and their minds are opened and they leave wanting to be kinder to nature and to animals, it's just the most wonderful thing. And I'm seeing lives change. And so, yeah, we did a wonderful thing here in California, but I want it to be bigger. I want to affect more animals, and I want to affect more children, and I want to open the hearts and minds of more people. And so I came up with this idea to start General Barns in every single state in the country and then the world, so that everyone can hug cows and cuddle turkeys and give pigs tummy rubs and look in the eyes of these animals and know for certain that we are all the same and we're all deserving of the same rights, freedoms, and happinesses, and we all deserve it. And if everyone can see these animals and open their hearts and minds and make kinder choices, then maybe we can have future generations that will be kinder to animals and have more reverence for Mother Earth and have more compassion for other humans. And maybe then we'll be closer to having peace on Earth. So that is our plan. A year ago, we started a General Barn in Tennessee. So 2 down, 48 more to go. We're working on the third. And we'll just keep going until we have one in every state, and we'll have every person in America be kind and compassionate and loving and connected to animals and to nature. And then we can start making laws to protect animals and to protect Mother Earth and the environment and support companies that do wonderful things and have reverence instead of destroying our planet.
Your story earlier about the children in South Central and the poor children that didn't have shoes or socks very well and just were so poverty stricken. That's a great story. And on that, this is why we need more love. We need more children and adults to learn about this. And I think your great idea of having a General Barn in not only every state in this country, but even further around the world would be one little step among others to teach, help, motivate people to understand about animals, first of all, instead of mistreating them and thinking them as objects, to treat them better and not eat them, for one thing, and also to learn about love, compassion, harmony through the children. And the children are one great stepping stone, because children love animals, but a lot of people love animals. So your idea, your dream should be taken, and we need more people to take that dream and help begin to do something besides yourself and a few people that you have to get more General Barnes out, I would like to continue to try to help you, not only through this radio station, but through the work that I do with homeless people, hungry people, veterans, seniors, disabled. I do a lot of work in that area. I don't get paid a penny, but it's okay. It's a lot of love. In fact, one of our other guests, Dr. Wendy Trainer, will be on this show in 2 weeks. She's going to meet me, and we're going to go to help. She wants to meet some of the homeless people that I work with. I want to get a group of homeless people, and I have two or three places in mind. And I'll even talk her into going to two or two places at least, instead of one, and so she can talk to them. She's asking me for a big favor because she's putting her book out, and she needs a little boost on something, and I'm going to help her. But I told her, well, you need to help us too. So she's going to do this. We need more things, more. And I think through your idea of the General Barn, it's one way, a beautiful way, to get people to understand animals, to understand and get more love in their hearts and change their whole attitudes. More of your thoughts on that.
Yeah. God, I mean, if all of us find something that we're interested in and passionate about that we can either donate our funds to or donate our time to, I think there's a mistaken view in our society that we're here to get. Like, I want to make money. I want a nice car. I want a big house. I want vacations. I want this. I want that. I don't think that's why we're here. I think we're here to give. And I think that each of us is born with something we're really good at. We're born with a song inside of us. We're born with a dance inside of us. And we're here to share that song and share that dance and share our talents with the world. And in our society, we like to think, oh, we're here to teach the children. But really, the children are here to teach us. They're born naturally kind and open and loving and connected to animals and connected to nature with that wonder and magic in their eyes and their hearts. And I think that they're naturally like that. And I think that slowly, slowly, it kind of gets beaten out of them. Like, oh, no, don't waste time doing that. You need to learn this. Or, no, no, don't. You know, don't spend your time on this. You need to be doing this. And I think slowly their dreams get beaten out of them. Their passions get beaten out of them. They're told to just sit down, be quiet, follow along. And then, yeah, you know, you're supposed to make lots of money, and then they get jobs that they don't really like, and they end up with lives that are unfulfilled. And so I think that whole process needs to kind of start differently. We need to see the talents, the passions, and the ideas that our children have, and we need to foster them and encourage them and support them so that they can blossom into the beings that they've come here to be. And instead of destroying those loves that kids naturally have for nature and animals, we need to follow their guidance and their direction and let them teach us kindness and gentleness.
Wow. Super. You know, every month or two or three, I have a guest, and we just talk about ideas on making this a better world. And some people said, I've thought about hell. Some people said we need more voting. But the one thing that pops up the most is what you and I are strong believers. That's why I like working with you, Ellie, is because we believe that love is maybe the biggest answer to how we can make a better world. And my thoughts on that, and I want yours for the last 3 minutes of the show, I think we need to have, first of all, love yourself. Too many people don't like themselves. They hate themselves. They have so much anger and hostility. And they turn it around, switch it around, and stop, go in the mirror and say, I love you. And really believe that you have to start loving yourself. Understand what you've been through just because you had a horrible childhood or you've been affected by different things in this ugly country that we live in. And I don't, believe me, it's a beautiful country in a lot of ways, but the stuff that's going on is ugly. That's what I meant. I don't mean to be a hater, because I still live here. But anyway, we need more love in this world. We need more compassion, more harmony, more peace, and starting with the children, with the animals. But people, human beings in this country and all over the world need to reach out to each other. The leaders, the people that are running this kind of world need to understand love. We have a lot of sick people that are running this world with the money. And by the way, when you said 1%, that's what the Occupy people used to say, but it's actually less than 1%, a fraction of 1% that really are doing all this damage. So let's talk about the last two or three minutes you have, because we've got to get going here, is your thoughts on why love can be one of the major answers to the problems that we have in this world.
Yeah, I mean, love is all there is. What else is there, really? What else is there to talk about? It's all about love. It's about who we love, and it's about finding love in our hearts for others. You know, this has been talked about before, but nobody dies and says, God, I wish I had made more money. I wish I had worked harder. I wish I'd have gotten more houses. I wish I'd have driven more cars. Nobody dies like that. You know, on our deathbed, we think, God, I wish I had loved my children more. I wish I had spent more time with my spouse. I wish I would have made a bigger impact on this world. Those are things that we leave thinking. So instead of waiting to think that on our deathbed, let's do it now. Let's make a bigger impact now. Let's make a bigger difference now. Let's love more now. In my whole life, I used to sing this song, I Want to Know What Love Is. And I used to think that love needed to be something that someone else gave to me. And I've had an epiphany recently where I realized that love isn't something someone gives me. Love is something that I feel and have in my own heart. It has nothing to do with others. It has nothing to do with my marriage or my kids or my friends. Love is something. To know what love is, we need to feel it. And so I know what love is because I have it for my dogs. I have it for my animals. I have it for the children that come here. I have so much love in my heart for, you know, when I see a flower or when I see a tree or when I see the beautiful sky and the sun shining or when I hear my husband's voice or when I hold my children's hands or when I see a connection between a human and an animal when they come to visit the gentle barn. There is so much love that I have. And so we need to approach love as something that is from the inside of us out, not something that someone else needs to do or give us. And it's all that matters. It's the only thing that matters. Having love inside of us for others and being kind and supportive and loving to others, that is the only thing. That is the only reason why we're here. And it's the only thing that matters. And it's the only thing that we feel when we come into this earth, and it's the only thing when we leave our body. It's the only thing that we really care about when we strip away all these other things. And so let's just get right down to the heart of the matter right now and start loving more. Start, and not love as a feeling, but love as a verb. How can we love more? When something bad is happening to someone else, to a minority or a woman or someone of color or someone of a sexual orientation, how can we love in that moment? How can we stand up for them? How can we be their voice? How can we be a protection for them, for an animal, for anyone? Love is a verb. It is an action. How can we love more? And I start every single day with that question. I wake up in the morning, I think of all the things I'm grateful for, and then I ask myself the question, how can I love more? How can I be more loving today? Please, angels, help me be more loving today. And that is my intention and how I start my day. How can I love more? And then I look for opportunities to literally be more loving. And that's the only thing that matters.
I think you'll agree with me that more people, because I do it every morning, I get up and I'm just grateful that I'm alive, that I live in this world, that I have some things that I have, because lots of people in this world don't have a place to lay their head down. They don't have food, water, a bathroom. They don't have a lot of things. They don't have much of it if they do have some of it. So we need to, love is the answer, and that's a beautifully well said. Ellie, could you please give your contact information for our listeners and read it slowly so that we can digest it and understand it? And I want people to stay in touch with what you're doing, your webpage, and I want to stimulate ideas of people. How can we make more gentle barns as one minor solution to a better world? Your contact.
Yes, absolutely. So they can find out all about the Gentle Barns through www.gentlebarn.org. And on our homepage of gentlebarn.org, you can see we have a Facebook page. We have Instagram and Twitter. You can follow the animals and the animal stories and new rescues through there. I've written a book called My Gentle Barn, Creating a Sanctuary Where Animals Heal and Children Learn to Hope. And that's available anywhere books are sold, Barnes & Noble, and on Amazon. But it's also available through our website, again, gentlebarn.org. And that's like my childhood and why animals meant so much to me and how I started the Gentle Barn and stories of the founding animals. And you can, but yeah, we'd love to have people come and support our work with the animals and the children. Come and volunteer if you're either in Knoxville, Tennessee or Los Angeles, California. But yeah, let's do this together.
Good. And let's get more Gentle Barns. If some of your listeners have any ideas on that or know a few people that might want to do that, please contact Ellie. You can contact me. I'm going to give my number out in a minute, too, because I want to help this woman do this amazing things. And, yes, your answer on love is the best, because that's the number one thing in this whole world, love. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for being on the show today. And we're going to continue your work, and I want to stay in touch with you. Thanks so much. It was a wonderful talk about love and animals and the whole world. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Bobby.
All right. Great, great. She does such good work. That's Ellie Lax of the Gentle Barn. Thank Ellie for being on the show. I'm going to have some more people to thank in a minute. But I want to tell you that in the rest of this month, we're going to have songs about Christmas at the end of the show, at the beginning of the show. So stay tuned with us. Next week, we have two guests on. Next week, we have one guest. That's Dr. Christine Horner, one of the world's best on longevity, living a longer quality life, telomeres, the whole thing on how we can avoid diseases, what we can do about them. We're going to really get into living longer with Dr. Christine Horner next Monday. That's December the 12th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time here. The week after, we have two guests. Dr. Wendy Trainer has been here before with us about happiness and love, how we need to have more of that and less anxiety, hate, greed, and all the ugly things that sometimes people have, even during Christmas. We're also going to have the man that does so much work in this country with Food Not Bombs, and that would be Kevin McHenry. He is all over this country with different places where they feed the homeless. We're going to talk about poverty, homeless, the world, and how we need to change a few things with him. So that's my phone number, for those that would like to have it, is area 323-770-1925. Again, my number is given to you, and I had several people call me this week. Feel free to call me about any situations you want to talk about some of the guests we had and some of the ideas you have or what problems you might have. I'm here to help you, okay? Again, my number, 323-770-1925. The phone number to call if you want to hear the show on your phone, 323, let's start over, area 701-801-3662. All right, I want to start thanking everybody, and I do want you to keep calling the show every Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time. I want to thank Ellie, our guest today. A wonderful, wonderful job on love and the animals. I want to thank our engineer, Zach, doing a great job. Jesse, that runs the Progressive Radio Network, that's been rejuvenated and doing great, great work. I want to thank Gary Null for starting the station, doing all the great work he does. He's on every Monday through Friday at 12 noon Eastern Time for 1 hour a day. I want to thank Stuart Castle, our producer, doing a lot of good work this week. Lydia, our associate producer. And I want to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in, staying with us. Tune in, same table with us for the songs. And hopefully our engineer can put this song on a little longer than usual since we're ending the show a little bit early. Thank you.
A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight, walking in the winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird, here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in the winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman, then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no man, but you can do the job when you're in town. Later on we'll conspire as we dream by the fire, to face unafraid the plans that we made, walking in the winter wonderland. A mantle of white, a heaven of diamonds shine down through the night. Two hearts are thrilling in spite of the chilling the weather. Love knows no season, love knows no clime. Romance can blossom